You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Just One Outdoors Podcast. Today, we are talking some more ducks. As you know from listening to our previous episodes, the team kind of got addicted this year after a hunt with Brandon and Marco. We have Brandon on. Now we're having Marco on. And Marco and I used to work together. He reached out, asked if we wanted to duck hunt, and it just kind of spiraled from there. We've spent millions of dollars on duck hunting gear now. We actually have a lease out in... No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Okay, my wife listens to this. Let's slow this down a little bit.
thank you, Deegan, for, buying us the blind and...
Okay, we're cutting this
now. That boat, that boat you got us, but...
if they could work on what it costs to get, like, pound-wise for duck... Duck braised, what it cost?
Oh,
Okay, I'll stop. I've worked it out a couple of times, and it's like, you can eat Wagyu every day.
Right. It's like, listen, I'm saving money in the long run. I mean, when I'm like 75, the tables will turn, and I'll have start making money. But
it's, one day down the road.
It's definitely... do it for the love of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. It was a blast. So sure. We'll just start with introduce yourself, how you got into kind of being an outdoorsman, hunting, fishing, things like that.
Okay. Well, I'm Marco. I'm probably not going to pronounce my last name because nobody can pronounce it or hear it anyway.
How do you pronounce it?
Krika.
Yeah, I never would have said that.
I get Krikey, I get Krikey, I get Kirk, I get Cricket. I get... On our wedding day, the pastor was like, he's like, well, hopefully we're going to have a lot of crickets running around, you know. Like, sure, just go with it. Yeah, roll with it. But anyhow, so yeah, I don't even pronounce it anymore. I just spell it out, and they still get it wrong 99% of the time, so even after spelling it out. But yeah, I grew up outdoors. I'm originally from South Africa, like, you know. And we did, goodness, I... was probably 7 years old or something when I really, really started getting into the hunting side. It was always just air rifle shooting and shooting doves, dove hunting. Yeah. You can do, when you're out there, you can do it all year long.
Right.
So there's not really any limits to that. If you're out on the farm or something, if you want to shoot a dove, you can shoot a dove. If you want to shoot a guinea fowl, you go shoot a guinea fowl. If you want to shoot a pheasant or a quail, you go shoot a pheasant or a quail. So that's kind of how I grew up. You walk around. If you get something, you get something. If you don't get something, if you walk around and get a rabbit, you shoot a rabbit. So that's kind of over there is kind of the way of the, if it's on your property, it's kind of fair game, you know.
Right.
Dang. So yeah, you, it is quite a bit of a different setup over there, but that's kind of how I got into it. And it's, I moved over here to the States. I farmed over here and, never really got into hunting while I was farming. I mean, I bought a little 223 there at one point, and we started doing some prairie dog. But that's more pest control, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we had dog towns up there that was 2 acres big, 3 acres big. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of prairie dogs, you know. You can start shooting on the left-hand side, and when you get back to the – when you move to the right-hand side, by the time you get to the right-hand side, you can turn around and start at front again.
Dang.
And it's just – you can – there's no stopping that stuff. It's just – so –
sounds kind of fun.
It's fun. It's fun. And this is South Dakota.
Yeah.
So you get those rolling hills and stuff, and you can kind of – I've seen people go up 500 yards out just to shoot them, you know.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Do all kinds of calibers, and then there's people who's like, okay, no, we want to be up close, or there's people who want to be really far away, and – they'll just make a day. They'll shoot thousands of rounds out, you know.
My grandpa back in the day, he went on a trip. I want to say it was to Arizona, but he went down there, took a 17 HMR, and went prairie dog hunting. He said it was so much fun.
Oh yeah,
just target rich. You just keep shooting all day long.
Oh yeah. No, you can go, and they're smart, but at the same time they're not smart. You know, if you get close, if they realize you're shooting at them, they'll disappear for about a half an hour, and then before you know it, they'll just be back out there. And eventually they'll stop coming out. It's easy if there's a vehicle, if they can see a vehicle or something.
Right.
But I didn't specifically well, I bought that little, it's a little carbine, mm-hmm. 2-3. And I started with that and because it fit nicely underneath the pickup seat in the back. So if we're driving around and stuff, I could grab it very easily if there's a coyote or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And I did make a mistake once. I shot the thing out of a tractor's cab. And I was on the grain cart. And you, if you've ever been in one of the newer tractors, that thing is soundproof. I mean, like, you're sitting in a... It's a solid soundproof box, you know. And you can't hear the... There's sound systems in it, the whole nine yards. And I'm driving and I'm chasing down this coyote. And at one point, I turn the tractor. It's an articulating tractor. And I open it up and I swing the door open and I just pick up and I pull the trigger, you know.
Oh, no.
I just about blew my ears off. And it was, yeah, lesson learned. Don't do that again. But did that over in South Dakota. Moved down here once I met my wife. She kind of changed all the plans for me. I never planned on staying in the States. And, well, I'm happily married and everything now. So, and then I met Brandon. Yeah, I listened to the other podcast, by the way, and I can tell you some stuff about him too.
Hey, let's do it.
Let's on dive duck hunt, into duck it. Hunts with us, it never stay with just one type of hunting.
Oh, so that's what it seemed like. Like as we were leaving, Marco's like, "Yeah, we should just walk that fence line and shoot rabbits." And it's like,
"Are we should?" Do it? But
it's like, "Should we?"
It's yeah. No, we've oh goodness, we started off once with duck hunting. We just jump shit ponds over there by us on the farm. Mm-hmm. So we went from pond to pond, got some permission on some of the neighbors there. So we go from his ponds and turn into like, oh, here's rabbits. Start shooting some rabbits, you know, and found the rabbits. Finally, we were done with that. We sat sitting there by the truck and this, you know, those thousands and thousands and thousands. I don't know if it's legal. Just so you know, those blackbirds.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Starlings. Oh,
yeah. Starlings, yep.
There's thousands of them coming over. And we just sit there and like, okay.
We've all heard the saying, a picture tells a thousand words, and the same can be said for deer mounts. A skull on the wall represents so much more than just a successful hunt. It represents the culmination of lots of work, some luck, and rich memories with friends and family. At Just One, we like to hang our skulls with skull hangers from Kibosh Outdoors. The hangers are secure, super easy to set up, and made in the U.S. They even have hangers for as little as $9 to get your skull sitting proudly at the perfect angle. Go check them out at KiboshOutdoors.com or follow the link in our bios and use code JUSTONE at checkout to save 10% on your order.
Next sport, how many can you hit with one shot, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So they come over, he takes a shot, I take a shot, and it's like, oh, yeah, 10. Okay. 8, you know, and it's just turned into the new habit there. Well, so it went from... Actually, after the rabbit hunting, it turned into a squirrel hunt because we were in this little patch and there's a bunch of squirrels in there. So we got the rabbits, moved to squirrels, from squirrels, we moved over to those blackbirds and turned out it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and we were not supposed to be out there that late. So it's okay, let's start tying it up. Let's go home, you know. But yeah, no, when it's me and Brandon, we usually we find a way to kind of stretch it out. And like you said, the wives, well, I don't know about his wife so much as mine. Mine got a little bit, I don't want to say agitated or something. I don't think she'll ever listen to this podcast, but
on the off chance she does.
Yeah. No, she got a little bit frustrated there at one point.
Mm-hmm. I've had those moments and I think I've had those moments with you, Deegan, where Madison has been like, where are you? Like, why aren't you home yet? And it's like, I was seeing a lot of deer. Like, but yeah, I can relate to that.
You said it's only going to be a couple hours. You'll be home by noon.
It's that whole guy code where it's like, I'm going fishing half the day. And then it's like half the day is 12 hours. It's not just 4 hours like you think.
It's like when I took you turkey hunting last year and Madison texts you and you're like, I actually have no idea where I am. I'm somewhere like 2 miles deep on public land. Deegan just keeps walking and won't stop.
we're exploring. I mean,
that's how it works. My biggest problem or my biggest mistake that I always make is I give time frames.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It's, hey, I'll be home, oh, maybe about 2 hours, you know.
Yeah.
It never works out to 2 hours. It's always 3 hours or 4 hours.
So how long have you been married, though?
We're going 6 years now.
So by now, she should understand that by 2 hours, yeah, it's really going to be four to six.
She understands it now. But we've got a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
And she's a little over 2 years old now. And then my son is going to be turning one in April. So hunting and stuff kind of slowed down a lot when the babies came in. Mm-hmm. And yes, at the same time, if I were to plan days out or something, it kind of gives a little bit of unfair thing towards her being stuck at home and taking care of the kids and all that stuff. So I should probably work on it a little bit.
He's admitting it.
Hopefully, she doesn't listen to this.
The first step to, what is it? Recovery is admitting it. I told you a little bit ago, our construction stuff we've got going on. Boy, I haven't been out since Christmas. We went out duck hunting with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the last time I went out.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. So it was.
Guys, don't have kids unless you're ready to give up hunting.
Well, don't have kids, don't buy a house, don't buy an old farmhouse.
Fair.
Don't do this. Don't start your business. I can give you a list. You know?
I can tell you what not to do. Yeah. I mean, as far as what to do.
No, that's blessings. It's
oh, absolutely.
Blessings. Absolutely.
I'll be honest.
Yeah. No, but you guys, that day, like, sparked. Like, I don't know if we told you guys. So Brian and I left from there, and Brian's like, hey, turn here as we're driving home. And apparently he knows a guy who owns property kind of in between us.
Yeah.
And it has this big pond on it. He's like, we're stopping and checking. I'm like, okay. We stop and check and we like park, we look down and someone had left decoys on the water. So we're like looking, going like, it is loaded with geese. And we're just like, this is going to, I'm looking through my binos and we're far enough away that you can't really tell
if it's
they're not like the cheaper, like, or old decoys. No, these are like brand new, like
Avian X.
Yeah. Like fuzzy. So I'm like, look, I'm like, I don't think they're moving. I think they're decoys, but it was like, it was so far away and there were so many that it was like, they could be moving, I guess. We got down there and it was just loaded with decoys, but did you shoot one? No, luckily.
But we've shot a couple before.
Yeah.
It's like, man, that thing's still sitting upright. Did I hit it? It starts sinking just slowly.
Yeah, we have a pond where, and it's kind of a shared pond, I guess. Mm-hmm. Someone else got permission over there, and I don't know, every now and then there's just like one decoy in between a bunch of ducks.
They just leave it.
And we'd go up there, and it's like, blast, 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 or something, and one more, wah-bang. Nope, that's the decoy.
It's the decoy.
But there's nothing else, you know? So in this specific little pond, is like, Brandon will know which one it is. But let's say it like this. It's been asked not to leave the decoys there. So some of the decoys might have got some swim lessons over time. If I've been there for like a year and a half,
yeah,
it's like, okay, the sun beat down on them. They didn't really even look like a decoy at the end of the day. So,
how many ponds do you guys have permission on?
Brandon's got probably a lot more
because it seemed like you guys had a ton. And like,
I've got a really, really good property around Joplin.
Yeah. No. Don't give location.
The way you're phrasing it, I know you're tiptoeing.
I thought about it. I'm like,
no. Just, you have a really good location.
So it's here's the thing. It's about 600 acres.
Dang.
That property. And I got some permission on there to deer hunt and everything. It all started off with duck hunting.
Is this the property where the monster bucks are?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know where the property is,
yeah,
but yeah.
Oh, it's
I've
south.
Seen the box.
I'll just
the
say
bucks
south
there.
Of Joplin. You know, that's all I'm saying. But anyhow. So it's about 600 acres, but we counted, and there's about 15 ponds on it.
Oh, man.
So one pond is a sanctuary pond. We're not allowed to hunt that pond. And in the sense of sanctuary. I mean, when we had that ice for 2 weeks, yeah, there was enough ducks on that pond that prevented it from freezing.
Holy cow.
So me and Brandon drove by there. We looked over and it's like, they're just going in a circle. They're just sitting there. There's ducks sitting on the ice all around the water that's not frozen. Everything else is frozen.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't take a shot. And it crossed our mind a few times. Like, maybe just one day. You just know, if she'll just let us. If the lady, it's an old lady that retired and everything, and she lives there by herself and everything. And I said, maybe just one day she'll let us, you know.
Man.
But I'm not willing to risk the
risk the 15 losing
other
it,
yeah, ponds.
Dang.
So, and that all started. I pulled in there, asked for permission. She at first said no, and then she found out I'm from South Africa. Her grandson is married to a South African girl.
Oh.
In Florida or New York or somewhere over there. And she's like, okay, maybe I'll let you hunt, maybe, you know. So she gave me permission and on a couple of the ponds and stuff, and we went out there, and then she gave me permission on a bunch of more ponds. And then she's like, hey, if you want to go fishing, just me and Brandon actually went out there during 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago. We had some ice.
Uh-huh.
And there's tree limbs that broke down in her driveway, like in front of her house. So I told her, I said, hey, don't worry about it. We're going to come and get them out of your way.
Yeah.
So we did that. And since then, it's pretty much a free. It's like, hey, just let me know when you're going to be out here. Man. And so, and it's been nice. You take care of the, it sounds bad. You take care of the old lady, but we take care of the old lady and she takes care of us.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's
so
that's how it works with properties. I mean,
yeah,
every time we ask for permission, we're like, you know,
yeah,
we'll help you out if you need something done.
Yeah.
Like, we're not just going to come onto your land and hunt.
Oh, yeah.
And not offer to do something for you. And
yeah,
that's not worked out for us yet, to be honest. We had one guy give us permission and we're like, let us know if you need help. And he's like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, no, just offer. I mean, I've seen some guys offer, oh, we'll come out or we'll eat your fence line for you quickly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take you 15 minutes to start up by his house, go the quarter mile down the road, come back on the other side.
Yeah.
Let's say it takes you half an hour, you know. But easy. You've got free permission on a pond that someone else might spend $1,000 to lease it.
Yeah.
That's the big things. I mean, there is stuff like that. Now back to your pond question. Me and Brandon were out there this year. We're sitting next to one of the big ponds where we always start off. So we'd start off on the one pond, then jump over on the other ponds and kind of go. We just walk through the property.
Yeah.
Go crawl up on one pond. Go walk through to the other ones. Crawl up on the pond. We're sitting there in our line, and I hear ducks behind us. There's no pond behind us. And I'm like, hey, I said, I can swear I'm hearing ducks just here back to the west side of us. And I'm like, well, okay, whatever. We walk over there. There's a pond that we didn't even know was there. And it's loaded. I mean, on the maps, there's no ponds on the maps. Huh. Like, so what it was is an old driveway ditch area where they drove through the ditch. That started filling up.
Ah.
And the guy's like, oh, yeah, for the last 2 years, it's actually been keeping water, the neighbor. And so we got there, and there was probably 50 birds on it.
Jeez.
So we just discovered another pond after 5 years
of hunting.
Nice.
And so it's like, hey, maybe we should go check all the other places, you know. And,
yeah.
And last year was the same thing. This lady's got a pond right behind her house. I mean, 50 yards away from her. And never really thought about it. Left it. Didn't touch it. And this one day, I'm driving by there, and I see there's a little green algae and stuff on there. And I look further back in that little pond. And I'm talking about this pond is, it's tiny.
Yeah.
Look further back. There's like 20 ducks in it. It's like, why have we never, ever checked that pond, you know?
Right.
And since then, it's like, okay, let's go check that pond. And we saw ducks on it every single time we go check it out. The last time, we missed it because there was just a single duck sitting underneath the brush and stuff.
Yeah.
And it flew out on the other side, and it's kind of a little bit close to the road, so we can't really go in from that side.
Mm-hmm.
But the there's probably 15, let's say 15, 16 ponds there. Jeez. Brandon's probably got, he's probably got the same amount of ponds on different other properties and stuff.
I'm debating, like, even around this area, just knocking on some doors next year, because what, especially those bigger ponds that don't freeze, and I want to get permission on a golf course. I went to a golf course, and it was like one of those negative days, and I mean, this tiny little pond, I don't know how it wasn't frozen, but it wasn't frozen. It was probably because the ducks on it. There was probably 5-6 dozen geese, and then probably 2 dozen ducks just on this pond. And I'm just like looking at it going, I need to get permission here. Like, to just be able to like go down there midday and just jump shoot it.
We've contemplated the same thing. And I think, I don't know if someone actually tried it or not, but we thought of, even if they don't allow us with a shotgun, go out there with the bows.
Oh, yeah.
The bow, flu feathers, or flu flus, whatever, and just try it, you know. And we were, at one point, we were really, really, we all got into it. We, like, three of us, we bought that bow. Well, not the bows, the arrows, the big cutting blades, everything. Yep. We were going to do duck hunting with the bows. Recurves.
Oof, that Recurves. Would be fun.
And we shot a goose one. Brandon shot a goose one. And that thing bounced on it. It flew through the air. It hit it on the back, and it just like, boom, it just bounced off of it.
Jeez.
And we looked at it, and this goose was obviously wounded. Mm-hmm. So we chased it down through a field, and in the meantime, we kind of lost permission on that property. not our fault or anything. It's not us who did anything wrong there. But, unfortunate events. We won't go into too much details.
That tends to happen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Been watching too many Tim Wells videos of him shooting those ducks out of the air.
I don't know. That takes the amount of arrows I'd lose. I mean, you've got to have a pretty good bank account for that.
Right?
You just see the highlight reel of him. You don't see the ones he misses, and you just see the arrow go into the next county or anything.
Yeah, yeah. And those, I mean, have you ever pulled an arrow back and just let it go?
Mm-hmm.
They just go. Yeah,
you lose track of it.
This guy knows all too well. He shot several off the side of a mountain and got to see just how far they go.
So we're out hunting in Colorado, elk hunting, and we find some, what the heck are they?
Grouse.
Oh, yeah. And there's kind of this little plateau, and then they're walking, kind of, it dips down. And they're walking across this clearing. I draw back. I empty. This is a day or two after I shot an elk at 82 yards. I have grouse walking at like 20 yards. All 5 arrows just sail off the mountain. I don't kill a single one. I got some feathers. And literally I found 4 of them and had to go back to find the 5th because I have a lighted nock. And the 5th was busted. It was like sticking in a tree. And I'm just like, I hate this. Like,
now you have to slow down now because, I mean, you said you shot that elk the day before.
Yeah.
Don't say too much. I mean, because you could have hit that elk with a lock shot there.
I know. I know.
I'm just kidding.
No, it was just like, I don't even know. Like, I was just drawing back, shooting, and...
Yeah,
boom.
It happens.
You know, it's funny because the best part about that was he wasn't the one to tell me, Clyde was. I think he might have been a little bit embarrassed because he had been making fun of me the day before for missing one.
So he sees one, or actually, I don't know, I don't even know. We see one, and he has his bow, but not his release.
I'm a lefty. Okay.
And he's a lefty.
Yeah.
And he shoots the trigger. I shoot a thumb button. So he takes mine, which is for a righty, and like draws back and is like, I can't do it. And like jerks, and the arrow, he's at, I mean, like this
20 yards.
20 yards misses like 4 feet to the left. And it was like, dude, what are you doing?
You can see in the video, like, you just see the arrow go over to the left, like, by 3 feet. I mean, I whiffed it. And I sat there and looked at Austin. I was like, that is the worst shot I think I have ever taken. But I was like, but if you watch, you can see my arm just like twitching because I'm trying to get the release to go. And I remember just getting mad, I'm like, screw it, and just pull the trigger and just like hope for the best.
Rip it and let it go.
Yeah, rip it. Just get one down range. I mean,
I need to get into the compound thing, but that's one of the things that I haven't gotten into.
They're fun.
Yeah, I've been doing the recurve thing.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't do it too much. Not enough. Not nearly enough. Let's say it's an excuse, but I bought my wife a crossbow. And I've been out with it a couple of times.
Yeah.
Didn't get anything. Kind of a rough season last season.
I can relate.
And I kind of messed up a little. Yeah, no, you... Well, it started off with the bow season was kind of rough.
Yeah.
Because it was so hot.
Yeah.
The temperatures were crazy. I mean, it would be 80 degrees, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, besides that one cold front we had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that was an opening, wasn't it?
Well, I'm talking like when we got the freezing temperatures like late, into duck season. That's the only time it got
cold.
Cold.
Yeah. So that type, I like to hang. I've got a very traditional, let's call it a traditional way of doing processing deer. Mm-hmm. So I do everything myself. Mm-hmm. I prefer to do rifle shooting. If I take one with the rifle, typically that thing will be 15 yards away from you. So if you shoot at something 15 yards away from you, I can shoot it in the head, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I shoot it in the head, it drops on the spot. I jump down, go there, slit the throat immediately.
Yeah.
A little bit gory, but the heart's still pumping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The heart's pumping all that blood out of there.
Yeah.
Turn a little bit, get it out, get the blood out of it. I don't skin it there. I don't field dress it there. I'll rather drag it 50 yards, get loaded like that on the truck so that I can skin it and it's clean.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get home with it, hang it upside down, skin it while it's still hot. That skin comes off easy. The meat's clean. I mean, there's no adrenaline in it because it dropped on the spot. There's no blood in it because the heart helped you pump it. It's just, the meat just tastes so much better and everything, in my opinion.
I process my own deer too. And it's kind of one of those deals where if it's cold enough, I like to let mine hang for a few days.
Yeah.
And I kind of dry age it almost. But but I'm like you, or my family is like you in the fact of if you're hunting, like in some of our places, you're hunting a trail that's as wide as this room.
Yeah.
So if you've got a 30-06, you might as well shoot the doe in the head.
Yeah.
And it's very controversial to do that
because
it's like some people are like, well, what if you bust its jaw? Or well, what if you shoot one's legs out from under it, shooting it in the shoulder too, you know? I mean, it can go either way.
It can. But at the same time, it's like, I'll tell you this much. I've that little 223 of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, a lot of people's like, no, don't hunt with 223. It's too small, you know. I've took deer long distance with it. I've took deer short distance with it. I took deer headshots. I did long heart. Mm-hmm. I took 2-3 years ago, I took a young buck at 311 yards with that carbine.
Mm-hmm.
Buzzard Roost saddles made right here in the great state of Louisiana should be on every Louisiana bow hunter's list as a must-have in their hunting arsenal. Buzzard Roost saddles achieves comfort through adjustability for those long day sets during the rut and also provides the maneuverability to get up and move when you see the need. Buzzard Roost saddles was created with the need to lighten the piro as well as the backpack to go deeper than everyone else. Louisiana bow hunters are a mixed bag, and Buzzard Roost Saddles is the tool to fit any job. Whether it's public land, private land, hardwoods, pines, or even the bottomless swamps, Buzzard Roost Saddles has what you need to stay mobile.
I was about out. I walked out, and this little buck stepped out, and just about like last 15 minutes of daylight. So dropped down, laid, took the shot. It walked over a little bit. Dropped down behind a brush pile, and I'm like, okay, it didn't act like it was, you know, shot. Got there, and it was down. Like, okay, it was definitely going down, everything. So it does its work. It's shot placement, all that stuff. You can go into all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But the headshot thing, I kind of feel like if you know that rifle that well, because I can pick that rifle up and I can put it 100 yards. I do clay discs, clay pigeons, whatever, traps. I can put traps out at 100 yards, pick the rifle up, pull the trigger, and I'll hit that trap every single time.
Right.
That trap at 100 yards is this big. I mean, it's just a couple inches, 4 inches or something,
right.
You know?
Right.
And so a deer at 15 yards, yes, it can move. Yes, it can do that. 90% of the time when that deer walks in, when he looks up at you, he's staring at you, and he's not moving a hair.
Right.
He's if you're going to try to shoot him while he's running, try to shoot him without letting him know you're there. Yeah, that's when he's going to be moving around and shooting. It's all these little details and stuff. For me, that makes a big difference, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So, and yeah, that's kind of my... Yeah. My point on that stuff, you know.
Well, it's like shooting a turkey. I don't know if you turkey hunt much, but everybody says don't shoot them in full strut. Like, don't shoot a turkey in full strut because their necks, you know, you want to
be able to... Oh, yeah, pulls down. And, yeah.
Well, me, on the other hand, if it's full strut and facing me at 10 yards and he's looking at me, I'm pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you still got something this big to shoot at with a 12-gauge at that close. Hopefully you can hit it.
Yeah. No, and you'll do damage, that's for sure.
I'm not taking that shot.
Yeah, of course you're not. You'll take an 82-yard elk, though.
Yeah. 82-yard frontal shot. That's all I'll do.
I don't know. Have you, a little bit off the topic, have you seen that video of that guy shooting that elk over in the... there's a video where this elk comes out. It's like a dark wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
The elk steps out, and there's this this log laying in front of it, and he shoots this elk right in from the front.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And this elk doesn't know it's been shot. So this elk is standing there. He shoots it, and this elk just kind of ducks a little.
Just falls
and just stands there. And you could see the heart literally just pumping that blood out where the arrow is sticking in. Yeah. And it's just standing there, and just... And then just starts weaving, and then just heads go back, and just bam.
Well, I'll tell you something funny, because all three of us that went out on that trip, we passed that video around.
That and same
we,
one?
Yeah, we were saying it to each other, man, this would be so cool if this happened. And sure enough, the one shot we had, well, the second shot we had on that bull.
The one shot that made contact.
The shot that killed the bull wound up actually being a full-on frontal shot in pretty much the exact same place.
Yeah.
Have you seen the video?
Of you?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I might have scrolled through some of them, but... Oh, yeah, that's gorgeous. That's gruesome, but that's just the way that is, like, artery out and out.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
And there's no recovering from that.
No.
Not on something like that.
Yeah.
No, that oak was down within, I think I walked it off, and I think it was 25 yards.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a 30 seconds bleed out scenario. Yeah.
It's very rare you shoot a bull elk and then watch it fall.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a lot of times you're like, okay, you're going to track this thing minimum 800 yards if you hit it where you're supposed to.
They've got a lot, especially if you have adrenaline stuff. I mean, that thing can go a long ways.
They're hardy animals. Whitetail are too, but elk just, I mean, they're just different.
Yeah.
That shot went, he tore up everything from the head down, just all the way down. I was like, I saw the blood and I was like, he's going to collapse before he even makes it off the trail. Yeah. Sure enough, he tipped over.
Yeah, that's satisfying.
The crazy thing is, like, I dug in there and kind of, I wanted to see my arrow and where I hit, because the arrow was inside of him. Like, it was crazy, but I cut his ribs off and started kind of...
Exploring,
field dressing him.
Doing an autopsy.
And literally, I hit everything but the heart.
Yeah.
Like, it was arteries and then lungs, gut, stomach, liver, all of it, because I was shooting the Grim Reaper... the Carney four blade, and it just...
I gotta rub this in. Who referred you to those?
Midwest Archery, Brad at Midwest Archery.
Okay. I don't know enough about that stuff. Yeah. I'm still stuck on the recurve stuff, and I'm not even any good at that. I mean, I hear there's a bow fishing thing at some point.
Oh.
I've heard about there something.
There is, yeah. And, so
I'll have to... I can make those count, you know. I don't know how, but out of just pulling back, my arm doesn't look the same by the end of the night.
Oh, because
there's some weird times. It's just pull back.
Yeah.
No matter what, you just sling it. But adrenaline, it covers all the pain.
Right. You
know? Yeah.
I don't think I've told Deegan, but there is, I'm not sure how we're going to do it or when. It's in the early stages, but we're thinking like some sort of bow fishing competition.
Okay.
Whether that's them versus us or we mix it up somehow, because they have a bow fishing rig too. Brian is working on his, so get out and try to do that. So we'll see.
It's worth it.
I'll have to get some new arrows for my bow fishing bow because I lost one when I shot a dead fish at undisclosed location last year. It pulled off and broke off. So
Brian has bows.
Yeah. I'm a lefty. We gotta say this again.
Maybe that's why you didn't kill any deer this year. Anyways,
we'll talk about that.
I want to talk a little bit about South Africa. What's the craziest thing you've hunted? I guess it could be here too. So, craziest thing or coolest thing.
I haven't done any dangerous hunts and stuff. I've hunted in areas where there was dangerous animals out there. I mean, I've
like what?
Rhinos and all that stuff, you know. So there's rhinos. You'd walk past them. I don't know, in meters, 100 meters, you'd walk past them, you know.
Jeez.
You don't necessarily go and try to, you know, you kind of stay out of their way.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've hunted places, hyenas and stuff, they're behind us and so on. I've been to places where there's been hyenas. Done a lot of bush pig hunting, which is quite a bit different than the feral pig hunting over here, I guess. I don't know if you've ever seen wild boar fever over in, I think it's in Germany.
I don't think I have.
It's kind of fun to watch. So it's wild boar fevers. They go, but they do driven hunts.
Okay.
So they put the people in there, and there's so many traditions on that wild boar hunting,
mm-hmm.
on the driven hunts, because you can't just pick up the gun and shoot whatever you get.
Right.
You know, you have to start off with, you shoot all the boars. If there's 15 pigs coming running towards you, you have to pick out the boar. Only once the boars are done, then you're allowed to shoot all the little ones. Because the mother is there to reproduce and...
Right. You'll take the mom out for you.
Take the mom out, whatever. You know, so there's like... It's not easy. And so that's one style of hunting. Now, for us in South Africa, it's more a pace control thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... Over here, shooting with spotlights and all the stuff, you can do it over there too. But that bush pigs, they're sneaky. You know, they're not easy to get. You have to really work to get to them. And if we do go get them with the dogs, you're running. You're running or you're trying to outsmart the pigs. So you go sit on a hill somewhere where if you have a crop field, you know the pigs are going to run down the valley. So you go sit at the end of that hill and you wait. If they're in there, they might run past you. They might turn 100 yards before you and run uphill. And you can miss them completely. So that's one thing that I've done quite a bit of. Can't necessarily say I'm the best at it because I didn't do it every day. But those guys do it for a living. And those same guys with those dogs, they're the Kruger National Park. This is a big national park in South Africa. Kruger National Park called those guys out if they have lions that came out. Or problem lions, because those lions will break out and end up in farmers' cattle or something, you know, mm-hmm. or catch people, you know.
Yeah.
So those lions, you can't put that lion back into the pens, you can't enclose them again. They will just break out again because they figured out, hey, humans are easy meal,
mm-hmm.
you know, or this is easy meal. If there's cattle that they can see, break through the electric fence. It's easier to go hunt that thing than try to go get a zebra or something.
Right.
So those guys come in and get those animals, which pack of dogs and all that stuff. I've heard some stories. It's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Dang.
And as far as my hunting stuff go, I mean, I've got this last year, I actually got a kudu and fantastic hunt. I mean, it was a workout. I'll be honest. It was not easy. This is not on a game farm, so it's wild game. It's actual moving game.
Hmm.
And it's a farmer there that during that hunting season time, you pretty much walk up the mountain, and then you're on top of the mountain, you kind of glass down, like you would do in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, but that kudu is not specific. That thing's called the ghost of the bushfield for a reason, because you can't see it. You'll walk right past it. You'll look right past it. you'll sit there for an hour and stare at something, not even see it. Huh. And then you just see the slightest movement, just a little head turn. And you'll see, oh, there's a set of horns underneath that tree, you know?
Dang.
And then you'll actually start moving closer, or if you're close enough and you're comfortable, you can take the shot or whatever, you know? But we spent the whole day. We literally, you hike up on that mountain. You spend the whole day up there, try to find it. If you get it, it's kind of, the nice thing is there's helpers on the farm.
Yeah.
They go get the animal.
That's nice.
So I didn't have to pack it out of there or anything like that. And honestly, it's not really a trophy hunt at that time. You're more, it's more meat hunting and the experience of the actual natural hunting.
Right.
Like no setting and waiting scenario, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing, no duck hunting like over here.
Okay.
We haven't. I haven't. I'm pretty sure it's somewhere there, but
yeah.
I haven't done. I shot geese with a 308, you know? So
yeah, right.
It's, I've done that so many times. It's pest control, you know?
Let's make it clear. Not in America.
Not in America.
That's illegal here.
He is a law-abiding citizen in the United States.
I am. I actually got my citizenship here about a month ago now.
Oh, congratulations.
So I'm finally a full.
Hmm. That's interesting. Do you like hunting over there or over here more?
It's I like walk and stalk.
Yeah.
Walk and stalk is my go-to. Sitting in a tree stand for 5-6 hours at a time, it kind of gets on my nerves a little bit.
That's fair.
I'll be honest, like my whole thing, that whole kudu hunt,
mm-hmm.
You still walk and stalk. You still kind of, similar scenario, yes, you sit, but you actually have to sit and wait and look and do all that stuff. You're, I think, half a kilometer up in the air. I mean, so you're high up on that mountain.
Yeah.
The views are phenomenal. I can show you some pictures here in a bit. And it's different.
Hey, if you ever do get into compound bow hunting, have you ever thought about antelope hunting?
So, South Dakota, where I used to work,
mm-hmm.
I farmed up there. We planted about 80,000 acres.
Wow.
And I've seen my fair share of antelope up there.
Yeah.
And I wish, honestly, I did not know. I wish I knew then what I knew now.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it's like, usually when hunting season opens up, it's harvesting season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're sitting on a combine or tractor, grain cart, hauling off grain or whatever the case is for 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, you just go. Once you're done with that season, you're tired. So we get on an airplane, we fly back to South Africa and go have a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you're, by that time, you're so over everything. And I've seen muleys, biggest ones I've ever seen, you know,
mm-hmm. Right.
15 yards away from my combine, laying in the wheat field. And just like, you look at it, it's like ginormous things. And pheasants and whitetails and pronghorns. Well, I call them pronghorns, antelope.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing.
Antelope out there. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, one of our guys, we were planting beginning of the year. And nothing against antelope, but they're kind of stupid.
Yeah,
yep.
Especially there, I'll bet.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. You'll have a two-lane road, little two-lane dirt road, you mm-hmm. know, through a field. They will run on that dirt road and won't break off of it. You can drive behind it, and it'll just stay in front of you right on that two-lane road and won't break away. So we had a guy, we planted with 120-foot planters. So that's a 48-row planter,
mm-hmm.
row crop. And you don't plan too fast. You plan, I don't know, maybe 12 miles an hour or something. I mm-hmm. don't know what he was doing at that time. But three antelope came running from the front, pretty much the front corner, straight towards him. And they ended up underneath a planter. He killed two of them. I don't know how. They ran in, ended up underneath a planter I had no idea. He ended up running over two of them. And so hunting antelope, if I have the chance to go do it now, I'd probably go do it. I hear it's quite a nice experience, long distance thing. I don't know with a bow, though.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because you are probably the first person I've ever heard say antelope are just downright stupid. Because, well, okay, I'll take that back. They're like hunting turkeys like just Eastern turkeys on steroids because they're just, their eyesight is so good.
Good, yeah.
They can see, like, I want to say, we can fact check this. Somebody's going to tell me I'm wrong, but I thought it was like 320 degrees around their head.
That's wrong.
I'm sure it is. But they can just see so well that yeah. it's almost, like, people will say,
hard,
like,
to get to
yeah,
them. And
yeah. So, like, my dad in Colorado, he went scouting around. He bought a tag. And he said he got, like, he saw some standing out in a field, just saw the white butts and pulled up his rangefinder. Yep. He's like, it's going E. Like, it isn't even reading. He took a step, they're gone.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that yeah. hard.
No, they're, and it was the same over there. Mm-hmm. We've had, they get used to vehicles, you know. So yeah. driving past them is one thing.
Right.
But if you get out, I ran into a moose once. If you get out of the vehicle and you actually start, the only thing that didn't run away was the moose.
It's the, like, what am I,
white tails ran away, all the other stuff ran away. The moose, and I'm assuming it's because of the eyesight, mm-hmm. supposedly they don't have very good eyesight, mm-hmm. and it's rare to see a moose up there, and got out, walked over to it, and realized, okay, hey, listen, this is actually a moose. So saw the size of the thing, it's a female, a cow,
mm-hmm.
turn around, said, okay, that's great, I gotta go work. Went back, took a blurry picture of a brown blob in a field, and that's it, you know.
We, when we were in Colorado, there was a big old bull moose that they walked right up on. And I mean, saw
we were 50 yards from it.
Yeah. Like, I saw it in a spotting scope, and it was one of those bulls, like, we ate lunch on our, or we stopped and got breakfast on our way out of town, and there was one hanging on the wall, and we looked up at it, we're like, that one's smaller. Like, it said it was a record for the state. And I was like, that one looks smaller than the yeah. one we saw. I mean, just yeah. massive paddles on that thing.
But I don't think you're... So, very hard to get tags or anything yes. like that over there?
Yeah. yeah.
Draw scenario?
Yep. Like, once every 12 years or something, you may...
It's a draw scenario, and I don't know the statistics on, like, how often you can draw it, but I do know you have to pay... So... Anytime you apply for a point, like elk hunting or anything yeah. over there, you have to buy a license with it. The cheapest license is a non-resident small game for $100.
Yeah.
So you do that, then that gets you access to apply to elk and mule deer. To apply to sheep, moose, I think are the only two. You have to pay another $100 just to apply.
Yeah.
So you have to pay $200 just for a shot at drawing.
Wow.
And that, and
you do that for 12 years. And it's yeah. like, you can
yeah. I could have went
buy
to
a couple of rifles, you know.
Man, there was part of me that, like, I'm sitting there with a roughly a 500 grain arrow, which after doing some research would have been okay. But I was a bit scared because I had that and a 9mm. That's all I had. And I'm like, okay, my bow could take it down, but it's not going to take it down instantly. It's like, it's going to take some time.
It's going to gore me before yeah. I get it down.
And my 9mm, I mean, I can empty the clip and it's probably not going to stop. So I'm standing there. My buddy is with me and he has pretty much the same thing. And we're just looking at it going, oh, please don't run at us. But at the same time, it was like,
please run at us.
Self-defense. Yeah. But dude, that thing, like you were saying, just stood there, looked at us, and then just kept walking. Like, yeah. I don't think it really ever saw us.
Like, okay, hey, this is people in front of me. I know there's something, but yeah. it didn't move for a minute, so yeah. let's just carry on.
The coolest thing was, like, a couple days after we initially saw it, down the mountain in this clearing, it was feeding in the middle of this clearing, and we were just looking down at it going, holy crap, that is... Sun's rising, like that National Geography, yeah. Geography, like scene where they're like showing the moose and, you know, you
perfect have, scenario,
perfect
bear coming in the back.
That's what it was. Like, it was crazy. but yeah, that was a bit intimidating.
That spot there was like perfect for moose. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a marsh kind of deal. Yeah. Like, you didn't realize until you went walking through it, but it was marshy.
Everything's muddy, sludgy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just where a moose wants to be.
Yeah. So I want to say a elk is about the same size as a kudu.
Okay.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Based on the picture you showed
me. Yeah, give or take. Now, eland, is about the same size as a moose, if not bigger. Because that eland gets big.
I mean, yeah.
Eland is that's a massive animal, weight-wise. You know?
How much does it weigh?
I don't even know. Probably 1,000 pounds, if not more.
Yeah, I think a moose is like 1,000 to 1,500, depending on where you're at. I was going to say,
I've seen an eland, and it's cattle size. I mean, bigger, you know.
Jeez.
So they get quite big. Now, you were talking about the size of the calibers and all that stuff. I grew up, the first deer I shot was with a 22.
Okay.
So
really?
Yeah. So it's called a duiker. And a duiker is like, it's the size of your husky.
Okay.
So Madison, Hyde, Dakota.
Just comparison. I will not say. But that was the first deer I shot was a duiker, and shot it with a 22. And I was probably, I don't know, maybe 9 years old or something.
Uh-huh.
Went out, got that one, shot it right between the horns, and dropped on the spot. And did that quite a few times afterwards. You know, after it's like, honestly, and this might have been at night too. This is South Africa.
Again. Not the U.S.
Yeah. So there's so many of them out at night. You know, sometimes if you go drive around and stuff, pest control, you go do it at night.
Mm-hmm.
If you go spotlight, you go drive around big farms. If you spotlight and stuff, you see rabbits, you see porcupines. Porcupines, big pain in the rear end. Shoot them, you know.
Yeah.
Porcupines, rabbits, if you don't take care of them, you'll end up with thousands of them. Bush pigs, their eyes don't glow, so you don't see them. You just see a dark hump moving through the grass or something.
Wind up shooting a cow by accident or something.
The cow's eyes glow.
Well, that's true. Unless it's facing away.
So unless it's facing. Yeah. So pig hunting, that's a whole other thing that makes it hard. You can't get into that. But caliber, that was my first thing, and I've always said, well, the caliber stuff, when he's mentioned now, I actually got a bear tag the first year.
Yeah. I forgot you got that.
I got a bear tag.
Here?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And
I hate you.
I wish so it'll just happen again. But so I went and I got permission. I tried to figure stuff out. We just moved. So we were still living in Joplin.
Mm-hmm.
Found out, okay, I got a bear tag. My wife was like ecstatic. She was excited. And then she started crying. I'm like, why? You're going to miss the birth of our first baby. And I'm like, no, I won't, you know, because our baby was due that week of bear season.
Yep. Oh.
So and my daughter came 2 weeks early, okay. Well, 10 days early, you know, so she came early. And that same time we moved out to the farm. So we took over the farm. We moved out there. My wife was very, very pregnant. We were sorting through stuff at the house. We've been doing this, and I went bear hunting. I grabbed my little 223. That's all I had. So I took my 223, and I went bear hunting. And the first time we went out, I went over to Shell Knob.
Mm-hmm.
Got permission there. Got bears on camera, you know. Yeah. On camera, like 10 of them. And different ones. You can tell it's different bears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this gentleman whose property it is, that's their deer hunting property. So the bears there is pushing the deer away.
Yep.
And he said he's getting more and more bears there, but nobody gets them. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. They can't get tags because they're out of state.
Oh my gosh!
So they're out of Arkansas. Jeez. They can shoot all the bears they want down there.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah, he doesn't care for bear. He just needs someone to come out there and get them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because right now, this is their prime spot for deer hunting. The gorgeous property. I mean, beautiful shooting lanes, grass, you know, trees, perfect shooting lanes coming in. The perfect scenery. You know, I don't know if you've hiked through Shell Knob, mm-hmm. that area through Mark Twain.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they own, like, their property is cutting into Mark Twain.
Dang.
So in theory, they own, like, I think they've got 600 acres, and it cuts into Mark Twain, like 300 acres cuts into it. So they've got just open land where nobody else can get there unless you walk all the way from there. So they've it's no pressure. Long story short, went out deer hunting, bear hunting the first time. Actually, it's my one South African friend with me. He's got a 416, and he's like, well, I'll just take my 416 with, you know. Yeah. We'll just take it as a backup or something. I fell in a creek, fell on my scope.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, well, there goes that. I said, I'll just carry a gun. We tried. We hiked 8 miles that day through, I think it was 8 miles, through that area where we walked in, made a big loop through the guy's property. We started on public land, walked through his property. At that point, everything looks like a bear. You see a lump in a tree.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bear, you know. You start stalking stuff. We came all the way back out, walked all the way back, didn't get anything. I went back a couple times afterwards. The one night, won't forget it, a Wednesday night, I went out. I took off from my previous employer. Took off for our baby. So I had I saved up 2 weeks or something of vacation. So no time waste there. That Wednesday I went out. The guy, the owner of the property, calls me. He's like, hey, are you still out of the property? I'm like, no, I just got home. He's like, that bear is in front of the cabin right now. I said, are you kidding me, right? He's like, no, no, no. He's looking at it on the camera. The camera is sending a picture right now. I said, I was there 45 minutes ago. And I'm like, where's the other guy? There's another. They gave me and one other guy. It's like brothers. The one brother gave me permission. The other brother gave another guy from Kansas. Says, where's the other guy? No, I don't know. Turns out the other guy was sitting on the other side of that cabin in his car.
Are you kidding
me? I'm like, dude. I said, nobody, I said, he could have literally walked around the side of it and got a bear. So the first bear they shot was shot about, I want to say about 2 miles away from where I was hunting. Dang. And I think they had that same bear on camera because it had the same marking on the chest. Mm-hmm. We've got one where he's laying on the side, laying on his back in front of the camera, just rolling around. You see the mark. And in the first picture of them posing with a bear, they got that same thing on them. And it's like, if I can get it over, I don't know what I would do differently. Because
you can't bait, so it's tough.
You can't do this. I tried going up, I tried going down, I tried finding food, I tried finding. You can't shoot them when they're hibernating or something. If they're in a den, you can't shoot them if they're more than one or something. There's a whole bunch of rules.
Yeah.
That you can do's and don'ts and whatever.
Right.
Man. But good experience.
Yeah.
For sure.
Scared my wife. So.
Yeah.
Made the birth at least, so.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm hoping to draw one of those, either the bear or elk. I would love to draw those.
I've been trying, same as everybody else. I've been trying again.
Yeah.
Thinking, maybe this time.
Maybe I'll get lucky. Dang.
I'm hoping by the time I'm 50 or so that you'll be able to get an elk tag a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So I don't have to drive all the way out to Colorado to go chase one. I can just go.
Well, did you hear? That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not.
I don't. And if anyone with MDC is listening and can fact check me, let me know. But I just heard a couple weeks ago that if, you call MDC and report an elk outside of the zone of whatever conservation land they're on, that zone, they treat it as a nuisance animal. And they'll come out and take it out instead of, tranquilizing and moving it. And I'm just like,
kind of keeping it from being hit by vehicles or whatever, overpopulation or something, and spreading disease or whatever they think to do.
Here's my thing, though, is why reintroduce them if you don't want it to grow? So that's kind of why I'm I didn't hear it from, I don't know, I forgot even who I heard it from. So it's not this is directly from MDC, but it's if that's what they're doing, why even reintroduce elk in the first place?
Right.
Because don't you want them to...
I don't know. Maybe it is the $10 sign-up fee or whatever, Yeah. Because of 5,000 people. But that numbers aren't going to hold long.
No.
If you go, I think it already dropped. I think the first year they had like 12,000 people or something, and then like 8,000 people.
Yeah.
People are like not signing up as much for it anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, again, didn't hear it from a wildlife biologist, so it could take this with a grain of salt, but I have heard from multiple people that the reason why CWD spread from across the states is it originated with Rocky Mountain elk.
Yeah.
They're the original ones that carry it. And the reason it wasn't caught early on is because if you know this, like younger deer don't really get it. It's as they get older. That's why in a lot of places where it hits, you'll have a lot of younger does, younger bucks, this and that. But if you have big mature bucks, they're the one, there's the ones that'll get sick. And they couldn't catch it because it doesn't show any symptoms until it gets, they get to a certain age. So they brought in these young elk. There was no way of seeing it.
It's possible, but and there's so many things about conservation stuff where I'm like, okay, hey, you can change some of this, you can change some of that, maybe do this, maybe put different limits on it, maybe say, I don't know, you know, there's...
It's a whole can of worms.
Yeah.
Here's my, and this could get me in trouble, I don't think CWD is as big of an issue as not just MDC, because I think there's a lot of good that MDC does. I want to throw that out there. And literally, people can disagree on just about every issue. But as a whole, across the states, I don't think CWD is as big of an issue as we are making it. I think blue tongue is a bigger issue than CWD, but we don't talk about it nearly as much.
You get vehicle hits. I mean, the amount of deer that vehicles are hitting during season.
Mm-hmm.
CWD, I don't think CWD is the cause of any of that stuff.
And now, here's the thing. I do think it's a real thing, but I don't think it's wiping out herds.
I think if it gets to a herd, then it'll wipe it out. I do think that it is a disease where they have no way of catching it early on. So if they catch it from, I can't remember whether it's like a microbe or something that's in water, but basically, you know, they run a temperature. Deer's first instinct is to go to water to cool down. So that's why you find so many dead ones in a pond. When they die in a pond, it winds up just spreading like wildfire to all the deer who drink out of that pond or that creek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if it gets to your herd, it can decimate it. But at the same time, at some point, I mean, herds rebound. I mean, it happens all across Iowa, all across Kansas. And here's my thing about it, is Iowa and Kansas have, no offense to Missouri, they have a far superior deer population to Missouri, even Illinois. Mm-hmm. But Kansas, you can use corn, you can do this, you can do that.
And that's what I'm getting to with my, the whole vehicles hitting deer, mm-hmm. population control is a big thing.
Yeah.
You telling me that, okay, you put a block of food out there, is going to infect all the other deer that comes out there?
Mm-hmm.
Not my thought, because if you go see how many times those deer are walking around, touching each other.
They're social animals.
Yeah.
I'm going to end this with this, because I don't want to gain more than listening to us and putting an eye on us. But so my favorite hunting spot, Austin knows it. I took him last year. We saw a deer. I mean, we saw a bobcat. I called in 6 bucks early season last year.
Yeah,
nice. And I wound up shooting one at 25 yards. I mean, there has been maybe 3 sits in the past 8 or 9 years where I've went and not seen a deer.
Yeah.
This year I had bucks all summer, and I mean everything was good. And granted, the place above us, deer used to transition through that field and use it as like a transition point to our hardwoods, but a house is being built there now, which threw a little bit of a wrench and stuff. But this year, CWD, I believe, hit my area pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see a single deer there all year in person. And then the MDC reached out to us and stated that it's a CWD target area now.
Yeah.
So, like, whereas they outlawed mineral, I can't use mineral. Yeah. I couldn't use deer cane. I couldn't use any of that because it would bring them all into a spot. You know, they can't eat it, blah, blah, blah. It frustrated me. I vented to Austin about it, but I was like, it's fine. You know, I didn't really understand it. Stopped. You know, it was no big deal. My thing is now that we're in a target area, it's anything goes. You can shoot them at night. You can feed them. You can bait them. And I'm like, so I spent all year not giving these deer mineral and stuff that could possibly help. Just so you can
call me now to kill them.
Yeah. So now I can throw the mineral and stuff out there. It's like, but that was whole to avoid the spread. Mm-hmm. Now you're okay with me bringing the spread in to shoot more.
Now, I want to mention one thing, and kind of both things conservation-wise. That's one thing, and it's maybe a little bit off the topic also. Have you seen how many young spotted fawns was out beginning of bow season?
Yes.
It's got to be second babies for the year.
Yeah. Well, I'll bring something else up to you. My father-in-law, this year's just weird. I showed Austin a video or a picture of a Jake full strut in front of my cameras. He's heard turkeys gobble, and that's not supposed to happen for another month and a half.
No.
Which I think the weather throws a huge effect into it. But my father-in-law 2 weeks ago saw a buck standing on the side of the road with nubs on his head. He's already growing antlers back.
So that whole scenario, that seasons change, areas change, patterns change, tree growth change, areas that might have been nice walkthrough areas, all of a sudden it's got a bad brush that grew this year because of a drought. They decide, okay, let's not walk through this area.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go 2 miles up north. There's a tree line going along a fence, you know, that guy brush hogs it.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, he's got a bunch of deer out there, and they've got a blast over there, and the other guy's got a bad season, you know.
Yeah.
So I've seen, because I had a little 10-acre property not too far from where I live, and there used to be a bunch of deer all the time. And the guy across the road, he went and he thinned out all the trees. He cleared out like 50 acres of trees, like to clean grass. Dang. All of a sudden, no deer.
Yep.
Took out their bedding.
Bedding, the movement side, because they would come down those trees, go over the fence, follow the fence line, go into that little 5-acre piece off the 10 acres, a little 2-3 acre, whatever in the back that's got trees, where they would cut through and they can bed in that little piece and then move over past the chicken houses and all that stuff. So that, it just, seasons change, everything changes. The seasons makes it so much harder too.
Right.
And now the other thing I was going to say is conservation-wise, I've seen a guy, I read an article, supposedly rhinos.
Mm-hmm.
This guy had a cow, a rhino cow, that was not giving him any calves. So this cow was the dominant cow in the herd as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if new calves came, she would go kill them. So she was hurting the population of rhinos.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy decided, okay, well, you're not allowed to shoot rhinos, just hunt them, whatever. You have to have a pretty good reason, or it's a pack permit, a pest animal control, or whatever the case is.
Right.
He sold those things for thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. Some Russian dude came out and hunted this rhino. Got a perfect trophy, everything. The money that they paid for it bought him 2 new rhinos. So he could buy 2 new rhinos, which both rhinos had calves in that same year.
Very nice.
So he had 4 new rhinos by getting rid of 1 rhino.
Yep.
And my opinion on trophy hunting and stuff, I'm not a big trophy hunter. I haven't really been. But if someone's going to pay to shoot a trophy, have him pay to shoot a trophy. If that thing is old enough to where he's going to end up dying because of age or something, just go ahead and take whatever conservation you can get out of it. For that purpose, you know.
Right.
So I'm not, that's my opinion. Sorry. So many topics, you know.
This is a whole other podcast that we'll have to get into. We'll have to have you back on. But is trophy hunting a form of conservation?
You know, I want to be here for that, because I can do a lot of takes like this all night long, baby.
And it can get fiery, you know. Oh,
for sure.
Okay, we're going to schedule this because, I mean, we're already over time, and I don't want to take it. This is an episode.
Talking about hunting stuff, I can go all
night. I'm no better, man.
I'm bad at it. And we barely spoke duck hunting.
Oh, I know. That's a hot topic. I'll end it with this. So I don't think your property, back to talking about yours, was entirely because of CWD. And I think you and I have talked about this. Yeah. I think a huge impact was done by the guy buying that land and building on it. That I think is the main thing.
Screwed up the transition period, place, you know, all of that.
CWD definitely had an impact, but we don't know enough about it either to know, like, is it a long term? Is it short term? Because we have data on both ends where deer have had CWD for 7 years and others have had it for a year. So that's an that it had an impact. I'm not denying that. But I think disease in general, I think, had an impact. Yeah. But I think blue tongue, more than anything, on your property had an impact that we're not talking about on a broad scale. So, I mean, we can get into this more when we talk about trophy hunting. Is it conservation? If you guys are listening to this episode, let us know your thoughts. We're going to schedule in an episode at some point here in the next month or two to talk about this, because it's a hot topic right now, especially in Colorado with mountain lions and things like that. Yeah. But like what you're saying, trophy hunting, it could be a form of conservation if done the right way. So I'd be interested to hear some opinions.
I do know Africa is notorious for trophy hunting being a huge way of conservation out there.
People get mad about
Sure.
You remember that, was it Cecil the Lion or whatever?
Yeah, the Dennis shot or whatever.
Yep.
I was just laughing at it. I mean, no, let's not open that can of worms.
Let's not open the can of worms.
We'll save it for another
next episode. So, all right. So we're going to wrap this one up. Look for, In the coming month, an episode on trophy hunting, because man, I really want to have that episode.
Me too.
But appreciate you guys for sticking with this episode. Listen to it. We went, like, I was thinking as we were talking, like, what am I going to title this episode? Because we talk CWD, we talk ducks, we talk South Africa hunting. I don't know.
Shots.
We talked everything. But that's honestly why I wanted to have you on, because I knew the episode would go so many directions and be a fun time.
I love it.
Deegan, thank you for filling in for a very sick Cameron. Cameron is under the weather. I think it's some buck fever that he's having. I think that's what it is. But we'll go ahead and wrap this one up. Thank you guys for tuning in. Marco, thanks for being on. No, we really appreciate it, and we're looking forward to the next one.